Live from the studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update. On today's show, we'll talk about President Obama's re-election announcement and NBC's Electoral College prediction. This and other hot topics in the news, both locally and nationally, next on Oregon Update.
Despite popular demand, we are back again for another Wednesday morning show, and with me in the studio is former Lane County Commissioner Cindy Will Dwyer.
Good morning.
And on the other side is former radio personality Cliff.
Oh, I'm the former radio personality. Hi.
And I am the former LCC student who's now a truck driver, so we're all former something. Welcome, everybody.
Well, I guess.
You guess.
I'm lost. So
you're lost.
Well, I'm a nobody.
Oh yes, and Bradley here is in the studio too. Who's are you former something?
Well, I'm a pastor.
You're okay.
He's a real.
What is that? Former? That's not former.
Are you a former pastor?
No. I'm a real one.
Oh, okay. Well, he's the only one here that's not a former something.
He's a former person.
A former. Anyways, welcome to the show.
This is starting to sound like our April Fool's edition.
And because we didn't do an April Fool's edition, that pulled you guys.
It's a little late.
Well, it could be. I mean, it could be a late April Fool's.
I'm notoriously late for everything. My mother brought me into this world in the 10th month of her pregnancy, and I've been behind ever since.
What'd you do say? I'm supposed to do what now?
On my tombstone, it's going to say she was even late for her funeral.
Yeah, that's what Elizabeth Taylor did. She was, they purposely, per her request, showed up 15 minutes late because she said, I always wanted to be late for my own funeral.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, to start up the show, I want to make everybody mad. Is that okay?
Oh, well, let's give the phone numbers first and people can be mad with us.
Okay.
Okay, we all jump in there.
4-6-7-2-1-9-8-8-7. Oh, I can do that. I have that written down, laying down here. It's been here for weeks and weeks and weeks, and it's in big letters. So even though I did have an operation on my eye Friday, I can still see it. 6-4-6-7-2-1-9-8-8-7.
And
that's the telephone number to call.
That's right. And people can also reach us on Twitter. We're also on Facebook. iTunes, we're all over the place. In fact, you can even talk to us right now besides the phone number by going into the chat room at www.blogtalkradio.com/KRBN, unless they've changed that too, which if you've noticed, if you're a regular Blog Talk Radio listener, they went and made changes and everything is just all messed up.
You have to remember to have to sign in, however, if you're going to go in the chat room.
That's true.
It doesn't cost any money, does it?
No, it doesn't cost any money, but unfortunately, unless that's one of the changes they made, which I hope so. I'm going to thank you for reminding me of that. I'm going to, when I talk to them later on today, you can, if you don't have a Blog Talk Radio account, which is free, when you go to a chat room to listen to the shows, you'll show up as guest. Unfortunately, you cannot participate in the conversation. You can just kind of follow along with everybody who's not there right now, but we need
to sign, which doesn't cost any money, then you can talk to us.
Exactly.
Love to do.
And again, 646-721-9887, and Cliff is going to get us mad. Go for it, Cliff.
Well, I just thought I'd bring it up the fact that, I don't know if everybody remembers, but a couple, 3-4 months ago, I don't know exactly the date either, but we had a stimulus program, $650 billion stimulus program that kicked in, and they put in $650 million into the budget. Then actually, when you really went back and looked at it, it wasn't $650 billion. It was $850 billion. And I thought about that and thought about that and thought about that because we supposedly were going to get whole bunches and bunches of new jobs. Instead, we lost like 130,000 jobs. But if you took that $850 billion and divided it up amongst our population, and I mean the entire population of what is now supposedly right around 308,745,538 approximately. That means that every man, woman, and child in the United States, if we had done this, could have gotten $256,000. Every man, woman and child could have gotten $256,000. If they divided that up at $50,000 a year and sent it to us at $50,000 a year, that would have stimulated the economy, not the way they did it. And so why did we just throw that money away when we could have each gotten $256,000, everyone? And that's including your kids. I'm sure if it's your kids, you're going to figure out how they spend it if they're young enough and small enough that they're not going to beat you over the head with a stick to get at it. But you want to talk about how they're throwing away our money. That's just, in my opinion, this has got to be the most corrupt government we have ever had in this country.
Well, you realize that the logistics that would cause if everybody was to get $250,000, I mean, the banks are required by law to report you to the federal government for any transaction over $10,000.
That's fine. It's the federal government giving it, so why not? They know about it.
How many of those people would have kept the money or a good portion of the money for as their rainy day retirement? And not put back into the economy. So there are a couple of issues with your...
I don't consider that an issue. I mean, there were, let's say half of them kept it. That's still putting more of it out there than we did. Where did it go? Where was it spent? $850 billion. Show me one thing that it bought.
Well, I can tell you one thing that it bought.
Okay.
When I was a county commissioner, my second term, I spent a good portion of my time working with the private sector to acquire some public benefit fiber optic routes throughout southwestern Oregon. And that stimulus package ended up providing money so that schools could hook up, so that government services that could be available that most people would have to drive upwards of 50 miles to receive. And so in that particular case, I think that was a good use of the stimulus money.
That was about 5 years before that stimulus package was put out there.
Say what?
That stimulus package I'm talking about was only about 4 months ago.
I understand. And that was when they received that award, Cliff. We've been fundraising and trying to find creative ways to get the electronics equipment to put on this dark fiber, as they call it, to light it, so that it can be used. And it's on a 20-year clock that's been ticking since 1999. So I believe that was a very good investment in the future of Oregon with the federal stimulus money. Now,
okay,
the pedestrian bridge over Delta Highway in the Valley River Center area, that I think that will probably serve the people that live in that area, but I don't know that that would have as big a bang as the fiber optic money that was given to Lane County to help Klamath County, Douglas County, Coos County be able to link up these schools and government services.
But what would also be interesting to know, too, is how much usage that bridge gets.
Mm-hmm. I've been by it several times in the last few weeks, and I've never seen anybody on it, but I'm not up here during the weekend.
Right. Now, admittedly, it does look cool at night because they lit it up pretty neat, which I understand that was just leftover money that they had because they came under budget, if I recall correctly.
Which will also continue to cost money.
Right. Well, yeah, it's fluorescent lighting, and then when somebody comes through with a BB gun and knocks it all out.
Well, it costs money to run fluorescent lighting. It costs money to run any lighting.
True.
You know, we're talking about it being there, hopefully, for 100 years and 100 years of light bills.
Well, and Eugene's trying to be Little Portland. Well, they've been trying to be Little Portland for as long as I can remember. And they're jealous because Portland, Oregon, has been announced as the number one bike-friendly city in the nation.
I did read that. And Cottage Grove is working on a plan to become one of the first scenic bike routes in the country with our Rao River Trail. So things are happening. I just wanted to throw that out there, Cliff, because I felt that while the stimulus package was huge, there were some good projects, I believe, that got funded through that effort.
Well, I still am not convinced that that was that stimulus package. There were three of them before that, and I think that's where that money came from. This one, I don't think we know anywhere of where it went because it just disappeared. It showed up unexpectedly, and then got bigger unexpectedly, and then it just, we stopped talking about it. It just disappeared. I mean, we had two of them before that that were up around the $1 trillion area that went to a lot of things. And yes, they can, whatever. Anyway, if it had been done that way, I do feel that they would have done a lot more than whatever they did with it. Because we're not. That's just one of the programs. You got to understand. Obama has spent, what is it, $3.5 trillion trying to get this economy back on something.
Well, yeah. I mean, those vacations aren't cheap.
Well, you know, again, I don't believe in a problem with vacations. I mean, that you're talking about stuff that everybody gets to go on a vacation, and there's no reason why we should say that the president can't, or that the president's wife can't, or that the president and his wife can't take separate vacations. There's nothing wrong with that, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe it means his marriage is on the rocks. I don't think so. But I see nothing at all wrong with him taking vacations. I see nothing at all with him playing golf. I do see something wrong with him flying to a different country every day of the week. That costs us a huge amount of money, but it's still a minuscule amount of money as to compared to the amount of money he's throwing at our economy and missing.
Well, my job doesn't pay me to take vacations.
Oh, I'm sure you get a vacation somewhere along the line.
Yeah, after I've been there for at least a year.
Well,
give me a couple days off, but it's not all expense paid.
He's been there 2 years, and he doesn't get all expense paid either.
Oh, so all the transportation fees are coming out of his pocket.
Well, you know, I think, didn't he take one where he took, he can't take civilian transportation. He just can't do it. He'd get shot or something. I mean, we have to, supposedly have to protect him. We don't really have to, but we do. I don't advocate at all that he not be on the Air Force One. But I do advocate that he not be on it as much as he is, because it does cost a lot of money.
Well, what about when Michelle went on vacation and she took all of her friends and they went on separate planes, and, you know, which caused, well, the expense of doing the separate planes and Secret Service, and then they rented, I guess, the top room at some motel, and I forget how many rooms they rented out, and they had quite a, from what I understand, they had quite a good party over there.
I think you should look and see who paid for it.
We did.
I don't recall that.
I don't know what stimulus you're talking about, but the one that was sent out in early 2009, is that the one that you're talking about, or you're talking about a more recent one, Cliff?
I'm talking one that was only about 4 months ago.
Okay.
This, the latest one that they kind of sneaked in, it just all of a sudden showed up. It was $650 billion, and then by the time it actually got out into the news, it was $850 billion, and nobody knew that it was coming, that I know of, and nobody knows where it went.
Well, I do know that the original one, you can track where it went on a website.
There are a couple of them that you can, yes.
And this one is www.recovery.gov. And when you go there, I typed in the zip code for downtown Eugene, 97401. It shows me that the 80 projects were given stimulus money that totaled nearly $70 million. And
yep.
Generated more than 80 jobs.
Good.
So
I agree that the first couple of stimulus packages that were put out there actually did go somewhere and did do something, but I have never been able to see anything in this last one. Anyway, it's no big thing. I just put it out there because I think people should be able to get mad. I mean, we're just throwing money away. You sit back and look at how much money that this administration has spent on putting this whole thing together, and then you go look at your recovery program webpage and figure out how much money total that was spent, and see if it gets anywhere close. Do they have a total on that page?
Let me go back to it, and I'll let you know.
Because look at how much money we have. We're spending more in I just get really upset at this budget. I haven't had a chance to go look because at the Republican budget yet. I was going to do that, and I haven't been able to see well enough this week to do that. But next week, I'm sure I'm going to be able to see, and I want to investigate because that came out, what, yesterday? And a lot of people are really upset about that, of course. And again, we're just touching the edge of what's going on. We're talking about a $1.7 billion deficit next year. That's just next year. We're not talking about the $4 trillion that we've already spent in the 2 years that he's been in office. And you know, everybody says, well, he was left this by the Bush administration. He didn't have to approve it. Somebody recommended it, and he just went wild. He added to it and kept adding to it.
Well, that's something I want to throw out there that I don't know if they voted on it or if they're going to vote on it this week, later this week, about the refunding the government.
Oh, yes.
Is that later this week?
It's Friday. It's tomorrow.
We had on our local radio station here, one of the congressmen came on and was talking about the government shutdown. And one of the questions that I posed to them when I called in the show is, the government shutting down, why should I care? How does it affect me? And it kind of took him back for a moment, and his answer was, basically, it doesn't. The first thing it does is it affects the money that's going out overseas, and then it's slowly trickled down after about a month or so to where the individual people would see it. But personally, as freely as they spend money, I say go ahead and shut it down.
Well, in actuality, if you think about it, that's a good thing because there's all the public employees don't get paid for those days, and so it actually saves money.
Well, that and maybe it makes them to tighten their belt a little bit. I mean, like, for example, the local EMX bus system here, the reason why there is the huge uproar over it is because there's federal funds available. There's lots of projects that have federal funds available that are just feel-good projects. So if the government shuts down, they'll be forced to do like the rest of us have to do and tighten their belt and be more particular where their money goes.
Well, you need to go back and look at what happened when the government shut down last time, and nothing happens. Basically, people don't get paid, but it also gets all gets fixed in within a month or two, and then they all get their retroactive payment, and so it really nothing happens. It just delays things, and it makes some people upset because I don't know how so many people who make good money, I mean good money, have no money left over to live on. If something were to happen and they lose one paycheck, they're in trouble. Well, that's ridiculous. If they don't know how to manage their money any better than that, then they are in trouble in the first place. So basically, shutting the government down is just an exercise in futility. It's just a big thing to talk about, but nothing really goes unfunded. It does for maybe a month or two or however long they leave it shut down, and then they come back and make up all the payments again. So basically nothing loses.
Well, who is this? CBS published an article today, government shutdown, what it means for you. And, of course, now they're trying to hit it a little bit closer to home, unlike with the guy that was on the show the other day. Talking about Social Security recipients would largely...
That hit me.
I was just going to mention that.
Would be largely unaffected by a shutdown, according to an official. Homeland Security, critical functions like border control would continue. No, that's surprising. Let's see, the U.S.
See, that's what I'm saying. They've taken all of the important things that could be a problem with the shutdown and exempted them.
Well, yeah. Well, again... too. I mean, the Postal Service would be uninterrupted. Air traffic control would be exempt. Food inspection, as I'm kind of reading and talking to, would continue. National parks and monuments.
Keeping those going?
Those would shut down just in time for spring break. Passport operations, all operations likely to be suppressed. Like that matters. I didn't know we cared about passports anymore. IRS. Let's see, would be suspended, and would refund associates for those associated with those returns. So the IRS, okay, we can suspend the IRS. Would you miss the IRS?
No, it's illegal to start with.
Okay, so yeah, according to the KRBN News Talk Radio poll, 3 out of 3 here say we would not miss the IRS. Federal, the FHA would be forced to suspend, and Medicare officials would be funded for a short term. So, yeah, shut it down.
See, that's the thing. They don't really mean what they're saying. They don't really shut down the government. They just shut down certain parts of it so they can holler and scream and yell and jump up and down. And it's been done before. Newt Gingrich was a part of it before the first time. Everybody blamed him. He didn't do it, of course. It was the Democrats who did it. They blamed him for all the bad stuff. And I'm not going to get into that because that was ridiculous. But anyway, the point is they change everything and they exempt all the things that are going to really be a problem with a government shutdown. And then they do it. And it just really doesn't affect much of anyone. I do think that they do take away the payroll of federal government employees. Now, I don't know if they reimburse them for that time or not. I know in the schools, when they shut down, when they take away the payroll, they don't get paid back for that. They give furloughs, and that's the reason for it, is to lose that money so that the school has it to spend. People don't realize, when you're talking about big payrolls, just a couple of days, I know one school system that went on strike because they wanted their paychecks to be, if payday fell on a Friday or Saturday or Sunday, they wanted their paycheck on a Friday. If the payroll, but the way they did it, the school board, if it fell on a Saturday, they got their paycheck on a Friday. If it fell on a Sunday, they got their paycheck on a Monday. Well, on those very few days that it fell on a Sunday, we're talking about 2 days longer that money was left in the bank. The interest on that money, and that, because it was in a large school district in Washington, the 2 days that money was left in the bank collecting interest was enough to fund the payroll for the entire year for 4 teachers. By just changing that one day of when they got their paycheck, they would have had to fire 4 teachers. And, of course, the teachers didn't mind that. They'll fire 4 teachers. Teachers have no, I don't know what I want to call it. They're rotten, in my opinion.
Teachers are rotten?
Yeah, they don't care about each other. If it's your paycheck, then you can get fired. I don't care.
Well, you know, that may be true for some school districts, but I know that there are other school districts here in Oregon where teachers have made concessions in their paychecks in order to retain their colleagues. I know South Lane School District in Cottage Grove has done that for the last several years now.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm sure that there are some people that still have a conscience, but their numbers are getting smaller, I think, unfortunately.
Now, there's probably a law against having a conscience. Either they'll try to tax it.
Yeah, there you go.
our legislature, which is always good for a laugh anyways, although they don't intend to do that, has got some stuff they're trying to push through. Of course, I clicked on the wrong thing that went away. One of the laws that they want to do is called the butt bill. And no, we're not talking about that type of butt. We're talking about cigarette butts.
Oh.
Which, now here's what's really funny in Oregon here. This bill, they want to make it not only just a law, which it is to, you know, if you throw it out your window, you're going to get fined. But if you're just walking around and drop it, you're going to get a $90 fine. But here's what's interesting. If you're going down the freeway, especially like Highway 101, the fine for throwing material out your window is $6,000, $900, roughly. It's pretty steep. However, if that piece of material happens to be on fire, it's a $560 fine.
What?
So if you're gonna litter bug, be sure that the thing is smoldering before you throw it out the window, because it'll be cheaper.
Okay. Okay.
And I don't make this up, folks.
Really? Well, you want to talk about you want to talk about ridiculous things? I mean, this is serious. This is not a farce.
A what?
Farce.
Oh.
Scientists are debating the risks of blocking the sun and other climate tweaks to fight global warming. And I'm serious. They're talking about going in England. The quiet, green solitude of an English county estate. They retreated to think the unthinkable. Scientists of earth, sea, and sky, scholars of law, politics, and philosophy, and in 3 intense days, clustered behind Chichley Hall's old brick walls, 4 dozen thinkers pondered the planet's fate as it grows warmer, weighing the idea of redirecting the sun to cool the atmosphere, and debated the question of who would make the decision to interfere with nature to try to save the planet. They're literally, seriously trying to think of blocking the sun in order to stop global warming. And how could you possibly think that wasn't going to totally destroy the earth? I mean, or make a change in the earth that's unknowing. You don't know what it's going to do. And it's and there's no way you can tell. But they're literally thinking about blocking the sun in order to combat global warming. You need to learn how to live with global warming. Don't change it, because it's going to happen one way or another. Something's going to happen. You block the sun, and then you're going to really make Mother Nature mad, if you want to call it that way.
Well, that makes just about as much sense as this Washington State House bill, which they passed a bill that makes it illegal to use stolen information.
Illegal to use stolen information.
Information technology. So if you know, like it was legal before, but now it's technically illegal, even though it was illegal already, but now they have a bill making it illegal.
5 years.
Because it's illegal.
Five
I'm confused.
We need to have
anyways, if you're confused too, 646-721-9887. Give us a call here. We got some people in the chat room. Welcome. And if you have anything that you'd like to contribute, we'll get into our main topic of the president's announcement for re-election in a very short period of time here in the second half of the show.
Boy, it's just absolutely amazing that thinking human beings in our world today can come up with such stupid ideas and really think they're doing something.
See where education gets you?
Well. That determines the quality of education.
That's right. Look at mine. I got a degree and became a truck driver.
Well, you know, unfortunately, education doesn't make you think. Education doesn't make you have good ideas. It just maybe makes you have more ideas. I don't know. But
as someone who minored in education in college, I think teaching today is probably a much more richer experience than perhaps it was in the past because of the internet. A teacher in the classroom now has access to so much information by which they can put it into packages for students that give them an even broader education than what was previously able to be accomplished.
Are the school systems or the unions or anybody I don't want to say mandating they're using the internet, but are the instructors being taught how to use the internet to be beneficial to their students?
School districts require teachers to do professional development in the summer. And when I was finishing my bachelor's degree at Oregon State, I was minoring in education, majoring in journalism, and I attended a summer class. I went to summer school, and I was in a class with a bunch of veteran teachers, and we were learning at that time, and this was 1990, we were learning how to incorporate then technology into the classroom with computers and how to create lesson plans that have a component of internet to teach kids computer literacy as well as research and how to find information.
Well, so people live voluntarily.
Well, and the kids already know more than the adults anyway.
Well, this is true.
That's why if you want to fix a computer, you get a 9-year-old.
That's the problem. The kids do know more than the adults, and that's why I think that the adults should be required to learn more.
Well, I think that's happening. I truly do. And with the big push for teacher performance, and it's a national trend now to link performance pay to the outcomes in the classroom, that more and more teachers are taking advantage of professional development opportunities so that they can be on top of their game.
That's good. That's very good. I'm all for that because I think in many cases, you're right. The kids are outstretching and outlearning and outdoing the teachers or the adults, not just teachers, but most adults.
Well, I know that in the classrooms that I've visited in when I was doing my student teaching, that what I was learning in the classroom wasn't always the interface of technology wasn't happening at that time. Now that I've been in a couple of classrooms that they now have computer labs where students go with specific assignments to go to specific websites to find specific information and to plug that in to what is being covered in the classroom through traditional textbooks.
I do know we're getting more and more computers in the classrooms, and interestingly enough, unfortunately, that's not a product of the government. It's a product of Bill Gates.
Well, he and Melinda have certainly been generous in that regard. You're absolutely right.
I mean, thousands and, well, millions and billions of dollars in buying computers for all kinds of schools. I know I'm from Washington State, and almost every school up in the counties that I lived in was outfitted by Bill Gates. It's just amazing.
Isn't it true that Bill Gates didn't finish college?
Yeah.
College dropout. That is true.
See?
Well, you know, again, education is not a do-all, end-all. Some people
that's
can think
true.
With...
And that's what we should be doing, Cliff, is we should be creating lifelong learners.
I agree.
And just teaching to a test. And that was one of the things with the No Child Left Behind legislation that came out of the Bush administration, is that it changed the way teaching was being done in the classrooms, because if your kids scored well on these tests, then that meant that your school district got more money. If it didn't, then you would be flagged as a problem district, and nobody would want to send their kids there. And the number of kids in the classroom each day determines how many dollars come to that particular district.
And I believe in Oregon, the all funds is what, $10,000 now?
Yeah, it's close to that. So they started teaching to the test, but who did that? It wasn't the students.
No, it was school districts telling teachers that they had to make sure that their students knew the material so that they could pass the state test in reading and math and science.
There's almost nothing we can do that the teachers and administration are not going to find a way around.
Well, that's yes. They're gonna do. I'm sure that there's learning that's going on besides that, but that has been now for a number of years a top priority for school districts and teachers, is to make sure that they look good on standardized tests.
Right.
And I'm one of those people that I get when I know that this test is going to be my future. It's really hard. I remember in high school having to take the college entrance exam. I oftentimes do not do well on tests because of the anxiety. And some students are like that. So it would be nice to have some other ways of being able to demonstrate proficiency other than, you know, circling little dots with a number 2 pencil.
I agree. And I don't know what the logistics of it would be, and I'm sure that they're quite an obstacle, but to try to come up with a different test every time, so that you can't teach the test, you can't learn, you can't teach to the test. You have to be able to think to do this. I mean, they've got to have people that can come up with thinking tests rather than just little dots.
Well, then somebody will say that based on the region, your background, your
socioeconomic status.
Exactly.
Yep.
So,
see, the problem, all right, we have so many teachers now, and the teachers in almost every community outnumber any other job, any other workforce. The teachers outnumber them. And consequently, the teachers are now running the world, and we've got a problem with that, in my opinion.
Well, some would say that that's true. In Oregon, our OEA, our Oregon Education Association, is one of the most powerful lobbies in Salem.
Yep, as it is everywhere. As it is everywhere.
Yesterday, the Honorable Governor John Kitzhaber spoke to the legislature on a proposal to create this Oregon Education Investment Board that would streamline administration and create this seamless strategic education budget that would go from early childhood all the way up to post-secondary education. And so if someone would like to get in on this conversation, you give us a call at 646-721-9887. That's 646-721-9887. Come on, folks, call in.
And if you've never called the talk show before, this is a good time to do it, because it's real easy, and I'll warn you in advance, it's very addicting.
Somebody's got to have an idea on how to fix this education system, because this has been a problem for a long, long time, and it's not getting better. It's getting worse, in my opinion. We're throwing more money at the education system and getting less for it than ever before, and it's not just a little bit. It's a huge amount more money than we've been ever spending before. You know, we're talking about, like you say, $10,000 per student per year, and are we getting $10,000 worth of education for our $10,000? I don't think so. If you look at private schools, regardless of where they're running, whether it's a church or whatever running a private school, they do this for huge amounts less money than our public school system, and actually, in almost every instance, do a better job of educating the students.
Well, yes. And one of the major networks, I can't remember, I think it was ABC 2020, that did a program called Upside Down in Education, mm-hmm. where they were comparing a school that put a lot of money into infrastructure. They even included an Olympic-sized pool, and compared it to a school that has a very little budget, where the students also helped out with janitorial functions, and the overall test scores were higher in the lower budget school.
Right.
There was no significant change at all in the higher budget school before and after the ramifications.
You know, I haven't been a certified teacher. I didn't go on to get my certification, but I have worked with youth for most of my adult life. And one thing I've learned about not just kids, but anybody, is that if they respect you and you set a high standard, they will do everything that they can to achieve the standard that you set for them.
Well, it also is, like you mentioned, with the low-cost school, the kids are invested in making it work. They're actually working to make it work. They're working to keep it clean. They're working to do things. They have more invested in it, and so they're going to be more enriched by it, or more interested in what it accomplishes for them. That happens with anybody and everywhere. If that's just something handed to you on a silver platter, no big thing.
I watched that movie, a documentary that was made last fall, Waiting for Superman, where it showed the inner city urban schools that were failing and how they instituted charter schools, and how kids that are in the neighborhood schools that are full of crime and no real learning's taking place, and teachers and staff and students are all terrified from gangs and substance abuse issues, that they were able to sit in a room and wait and hope and pray that their number would get called so that they would be able to attend one of the vacancies in the charter schools. And if they didn't get the charter school, they were starting to measure those that graduated from charter schools as those who graduated from these non-functioning neighborhood schools, and how much better that they were doing, and why they were staking everything on a lottery. That's not the way. I mean, education in America used to be world class. And in the last 30 years, it has just gradually gone down to the lowest common denominator. And that's so sad.
Well, it's because education has not has been and been based on a, what do I want to say, economics. Basically, the more money, everybody feels that the more money, if you buy an expensive piece of jewelry, it's much better than a cheap piece of jewelry. It's not necessarily the case. The more money you throw at it doesn't make it better.
I couldn't agree more, Cliff, with that statement.
There's got to be some sort of pride somewhere. And in our education, in our public education system, there doesn't seem to be any real pride. I'm not saying there aren't exceptions to that rule, but at this particular point, it seems to be that there's very little pride left. The students have none, the teachers have none, the administration has none. And unfortunately, it has nothing to do with what anybody's getting paid. It has nothing to do with what we're paying per student. It just has to do with the education system is, well, for one thing, we seem to think that we need to fix it all the time. And we're constantly fixing it, and it isn't, even when it's not broken. Right now, we fixed it to the point that it's broken.
Speaking of broken, we're just about to the halfway point of the show. 646-721-9887. Do you have any final words on this? And
I do.
Okay, Bradley, go ahead.
Just studies show that parents that are involved in their children's education,
yes,
whether it be public or charter, it makes a huge difference. Problem is, the public school system sometimes puts some unrealistic expectations on the parents to even come in the school.
That's true. I've
check
read
your
that.
Guns at the door.
Yeah, well, I've read that they were going to make it.
Did you
the
vote
parents,
for Obama?
The parents were going to get fined. I don't think it was in Oregon. It was going to get fined if they didn't show up to PTA meetings. But you know, in this economy, it takes two incomes just to be able to pay the bills anymore.
But see, that's one of the things you're talking about, like charter schools. Charter schools rely considerably more on parental help, shall we say, and assistance, than do public schools. But on the same token, the people who are interested enough to send their kids to a charter school are interested enough and usually have the ability to be able to help the school. But, you know, there is a point where, yes, if we had more parental, well, I guess I should change that. We need to have more parental input into the student's life, period, at home, at school, everywhere, because we got too many kids raising themselves.
We do. We do have students raising themselves, and that's another sad commentary on our culture these days. I know that in Springfield, Oregon, they because they have spent so much cutting back on the arts in schools, that they've now created an arts academy that students that are not thriving in a traditional classroom can go to that particular school. And yes, they do get their academics, but they have the opportunity to be involved in projects that keep them motivated and keep them in school and keep them learning in other areas and finding ways to integrate the arts into the traditional curriculum.
You see, that I think is a great idea, except that I personally believe that we should have this arts academy and all of these different great ideas integrated into the public schools, so that when you go to the public schools, you can take particular classes that give you that option, and you don't have to take the classes that don't give it to you.
That's the way it used to be.
Yeah.
When I graduated, go ahead.
I just said surprise, surprise.
Yeah, surprise, surprise.
You know, when I started out my education in a private parochial school in New Orleans that I went to from first through the fourth grade, and then I got tired of riding a bus for 3 hours after school every day, so I begged my mom and dad to let me go to the neighborhood school so I could be with my friends, my neighborhood buddies all day. And at that time, I was in a suburb of New Orleans that had a really good education system that was well supported. And but they found out that when I went to public school that I was really good in reading and writing, But my math skills were like three grade levels. You know, I was functioning much lower grade level in math than I was. So not every private school is going to meet every student's need. And that's why we're getting to a point where I said being lifelong learners, where we can have the resources at our fingertips, literally now with the internet, to learn about things that we're interested in and to be able to do enrichment have enrichment opportunities for students.
See, there are certain students that are their aptitude doesn't go towards certain subjects. For example, you mentioned math. I was terrible in math. So when I got into a class that was doing algebra and adding X and X, and I know X and X don't add up there. X and X aren't numbers, so it just doesn't work, and I know that. But consequently, I didn't do very well. I struggled along for almost a year trying to do real math, algebra and geometry and stuff like that, and it was just totally beyond me. And in the school that I was in, they had enough smarts that they had a business class, business math. Well, that made sense to me because that was numbers, and I learned how to do business math, learned how to keep business books, and that actually did significantly more for me than any other kind of math, even though I was one who later on got into electronics and did have a little trouble because I was the electronics uses the X's and R's and all that junk. But what I used more was the business math thing. That did more for me in owning a business and that sort of thing than anything else. And schools nowadays don't even offer that kind of thing. They just, if you don't do it, then tough luck. You need to work harder. Obviously, it's you that are a problem. Well, it was me that it was a problem. It just wasn't my thing. I mean, there are other things that were that I just breezed through, but that math thing was a problem for me. But I was very glad that they put me in a business math class, and I breezed through that. Well, not really, but I did go through it very easily.
And now they want to eliminate the F. Anyways, we're beyond the halfway point. I'm going to switch gears here real quick. I got a quick little what the heck are they thinking segment.
All right.
You have got to be kidding me. What the heck were they thinking? Can you actually believe they did that?
It's Robin's What the Heck Are They Thinking Award, where Robin picks out some of the dumbest and most ridiculous headlines of the week. And now, with this week's picks, here's Robin.
All right, and this week's award goes out to the Oregon lawmakers for considering daytime headlight mandate, which will require all vehicles driving during the daylight to have their headlights on at all times. And, of course, they are assuming nighttime as well. Now, that would mean that unsuspecting motorists who happen to cruise into our little state would be at risk of getting a ticket because they would not be aware of our new law. But the question goes out to, is it really necessary? And also, what I'd like to point out, just like with motorcycles, although motorcycles is handy to have, I mean, it is for safety, but if you have headlights on cars at all the time, pretty soon it's just like a sound. You start ignoring it after a while because everybody has it.
Well, and all the new cars now they automatically take care of that for you. When you're driving down the road, a new car will have its headlights on, and when you turn it off, it turns its headlights off. For those that, like me, are still driving older cars from the 90s, that don't have that feature, you have to be responsible. And, you know, I better go check to see, because it was raining on the way up. Did I turn my lights off when I got here?
Well, in Canada, it's a law. Every car that's made after a certain date that comes out of Canada, it's going to have its lights on all the time.
Exactly. And like Cindy was just commenting, that the cars, I forget what model year it was, were required to have running lights. But that actually help you to notice a car more in the daytime? The human nature, you just filter it out anyway. But if you can't see a car, you shouldn't be on the road, in my opinion.
I agree with that, and I don't think having the headlights on and blinding me, well, which of course in the daytime it doesn't, but having the headlights on is not an incentive and does not help me see that car any better. If I was on a two-lane road, it might. But I don't think it does.
I believe that when it's raining, that headlights do. And there was
Oregon
lawmakers did have a proposal in a prior session that said if it's raining, you must have your headlights on.
If you turn your wipers on, you got to have the headlights on as well. It's a proposed law as well.
That's right.
Now, that would make sense because, yes, visibility is reduced because of the rain. I think that's already on the books. But
no, they said that was common sense.
That was common sense.
And
well,
they
we can't
didn't
want to
legislate common sense.
That's right, because they'd be out of a job.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Anyway, 646-721-9887. Our main topic for today, President Obama announced this week that he's running for re-election. And
with a $1 billion war chest.
Exactly.
That he's sitting on top of.
With low numbers and everything, he apparently thinks that he's doing an excellent job. And to kind of go out and get the reaction of people's announcement, I took the microphones out to downtown Eugene and did some interviews with some people. And here's a recording of that clip. Yeah, Cliff and Cindy, I'm out here on the streets of Eugene asking people how they feel about the news of President Obama announcing his re-election bid for president for 2012. To kind of get their reaction and see how people really feel about the issue. So I'm going to stop a few people up here on the street and we'll get some feedback about how the public feels about this and their reactions. Excuse me, miss. How do you feel about President Obama running for re-election in 2012?
Obama sí, bravo para el presidente Obama, como lo es ayudar y animar a hacer españolas el idioma nacional. No hablan inglés. No es necesario la reforma de inmigración hasta el final.
Okay. And you, sir, how do you feel about President Obama running again for president in 2012?
Impeach Obama now. Stop him before he kills this country. That's my opinion. Get out the bumper stickers, put them on your cars, and get the liberals riled up. Get in their faces, scream in their faces. Don't take their garbage because you're losing this country.
So you really don't have an opinion on this?
What's up, Doug?
With President Obama announcing his bid for re-election the other day in the news, do you really feel that the president is really in touch with the people?
He don't know me very well, do he?
What do you think the reaction of the people was when President Obama announced his bid to run for president again in 2012?
Where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom.
All right, everybody wants to be a comedian. Excuse me. You've heard that President Obama has announced his bid for re-election again in 2012. How do you feel about that?
I say, what was that again, young fella?
I'm not a fellow, you moron.
Yes, quite. I'm sorry about that. What was the question again?
President Obama is running for office again in 2012. How do you feel about that?
President who?
Obama, tall guy, funny ears, black, African-American, you know, been president for the last couple years.
Oh, yes. I totally understand what you're saying there, old chap. I don't really know.
So, there you have it. Back to you in the studio.
Nice work, Robin.
So, that's the segment on the street.
Well, I have an opinion.
No, really?
what a surprise.
Yeah, really. I really don't think it's any big surprise that he's running. I mean, I would have... expect him to run. I'm sure thinks he can win. The polls don't indicate that he wouldn't win at this particular point, but we really don't have an indication of just who's going to be running on the Republican side yet. So the polls really don't mean anything as far as I'm concerned. They just take possibilities of, I mean, everybody comes up with ideas of how he's going to fare against someone else. In the first place, it's all going to depend on what our economy is like in 2012, because if the economy rallies around and gets great, and it's a possibility it could by default, he could do very well. But if it keeps going where it's going, and that looks more likely, if we've got $5 gasoline, it's going to be real hard for him to get reelected.
Well, according to an NBC battleground map, which they've recently revised, it takes 270 electoral votes to win an election, and they're predicting already that the Obama has an edge with 232 electoral votes.
Well, see, again, they have no idea. They can predict all this stuff that they want to, and I've seen them predict stuff right up till Dewey lost, if you want to get right down to that. So it's just absurd exercise in futility at this particular point in time, because they're talking to people who don't know what they're talking about. I don't care who they are and how much education they have or don't have. They can't know what they're talking about because they weren't there yet.
Well, that's true. And I guess that also brings up the same issue of the Electoral College. You know, every presidential election they talk about, we should get rid of it. Do you think that its time has come?
In 1976, it came and went. I mean, years ago. I mean, it's just a waste of time. We have the ability to direct elect things. I mean, we have the ability, the technological ability to do things directly, and we need to start. I mean, there is a point. Our system was fine, and it had a great reason back at one time or another, but right now we're finding out that this business of electing people to represent us ain't working. They aren't. They're not representing us, or if they are representing us, they're not doing it the way we want it, and that's a problem.
Well, especially when our representatives are no longer representatives. I can't remember what year it was, but I think it was a Medford representative that this was years back, so my failing memory. But she voted against what her constituents wanted because she said in her own good conscience she couldn't do it. And that's when you no longer become a representative style of democracy. Or
well, we were founded as a republic. I learned that in my civics class in the eighth grade.
We what? Say it again.
We were founded, not a democracy, but as a republic. That
right.
was basic lesson in civics 101.
Yeah, yeah.
But well, it was the Electoral College history is that at the time, education was not universal as it is today, at least the opportunity for education. And so for those people that were understanding, should we have a national bank? Should we give more power to the states than the federal government? I mean, those were questions that they were grappling with in the 1700s and why they decided to go with an Electoral College to elect the next president. But that has long since been the function of the Electoral College.
Well, maybe we're back to needing it again. Our education system's falling apart.
I knew I gave you an opening there.
Exactly. But if I recall my history right, there's been at least two instances where the Electoral College put a president in office against the popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
One of those wasn't that long ago.
Nope, 2000.
Yeah.
Well, I know that when President Obama announced his reelection bid, that although he's not declared yet, one of the front runners for the Republican Party, former Massachusetts Governor Mitch Romney, he tweeted that he looks forward to hearing the details on Obama's job plan, because there are 14 million unemployed Americans who would also like to know that.
And I believe there's also talks, too, about changing it where, like with going for any other job, you have to show your right to work in the United States. In other words, your ID, so to speak, so we don't have this controversy again, too.
Mm-hmm. Boy, Bradley just went through that process of trying to. Now, I had to have my mom in New Orleans, send me a copy of my birth certificate, because you now have to document that you are who you say you are.
Unless you're president.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you want to go and sign up for the Obama campaign, it's barackobama.com, Obama for America 2012. And that's where you can – his front page is very, very, very nice, very sedate.
In fact, if you look at the video that he has on his page, it really doesn't say that much if you come right down to it. But here's something that's really interesting. Go down to the bottom of the page and look at the terms of service, and don't even think about using anything from that page or audio or anything like that, because they're going a little bit beyond what's allowed in the fair use doctrine. So I was going to throw some audio clips from that, but reading that, I decided, no, I don't think I will.
Maybe not this time, huh?
Not this time. There's enough I can get without doing his. But there wasn't really much from the from his clip anyways to really make it exciting. It was rather...
The page that I was sending you to is one where you can click on it and donate.
Of course.
And that's where he's talking about getting $1 billion. He got $750 million last time to elect himself. And that's, again, I keep going back to this campaign finance reform. We've got to do something about this. We can't have everybody spending that kind of money trying to get into office, because they spend their entire time in office trying to find that kind of money. And they don't do anything for us. And that's why we've got right now, I think, probably one of the most corrupt governments that the United States has ever seen. And probably I'm sure that most of the rest of the world, since they've been around so much longer than we have, has seen times when they've had corrupt governments too. But we're taking the cake at the moment, I think.
Well, the sad thing about it, to kind of make your point, there are people out there who are more than qualified for the office. They just don't have the financial means to whereabouts to be able to run for office.
That's what I'm saying.
Oprah. They need to call Oprah?
Yeah.
There you go.
That's what Obama did.
Called Oprah?
Yeah.
That's true. Hey, Oprah, I want to run for president. Can you loan me a couple trillion?
Are you black?
I could be.
Unfortunately, that's the case.
Well, I wanted to change the subject here real quickly on that specific minor point, to say that the Republican National Committee has launched a new website, and its theme is Hope Isn't Hiring.
That's right.
Hope Isn't Hiring.
And so Hope Isn't Hiring, and it's pinning the nation's nearly 9% unemployment rate, growing national debt, and rising gas prices. That's all Obama's fault, according to the Republicans.
And can we afford any more hope and change? Yeah, they're hoping to, the Obama campaign is hoping to get that energy going again that Obama built in the, 2008. But back then, we were bushed out. I was thinking that, the presidency shouldn't be a family career.
It always has been.
Well, yeah, but... people wanted change. They were tired of the way things were going, and Obama came in as a salesman and says, I'm offering you hope and change, and we can do attitude. And people going, yes, we need something different. But then look who was running against him.
Did we learn?
For one, anybody we didn't want Cheney because that was another Bush.
I liked Mike myself.
Mike
Huckabee.
Oh.
When there were the campaigns going on for presidency a few years back, I really did like a lot of the policies that Mike Huckabee was proposing. But I don't think he's going to run this year. I think that he's pretty comfortable where he is, doing what he's doing as a talk show host and traveling around and getting his speaker fees. I don't think he's...
Unfortunately, I think he's he would be somewhat like Obama. He has no idea what's going on in there and what it would take to do that job. And I think he would get in there and find himself just totally swamped and unable to accomplish anything by it.
Well, Cliff, who was the last president that you liked? I'll put you on the spot.
Oh, the last president that I liked, or the last, the one running for president that I liked, as a matter of fact, to be honest with you, is now for vice president. I would have much rather had him as president than Obama. And I think he
Joe
would have...
Bite me?
Huh?
Joe Bite Me?
Okay.
Joe Biden.
I feel Biden would be so much more capable of doing the job than Obama that it's not even funny. Biden has a tendency to say what he means rather than paying attention and thinking about it. But if he was in the position of being president, I'm sure he would be coached to think about it a lot more. But he has much more experience in all of the things that Obama doesn't. Our economy would be better. Our defense policies would be better. Made a mistake.
What do you think about Caribou Barbie, Sarah Palin?
You better call people and by real names. I don't know all this crap.
Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin wouldn't be able to do anything because she doesn't know what's going on. She's never been there. She has no idea.
Well,
at least she does have original ideas.
And that's the thing when somebody says, well, you don't have the experience. No, because they weren't president before. How can you have experience as president unless you were president?
Biden wasn't president, but he has a lot more experience being around them and being in the White House and knowing what goes on. He has been there, done that. He was not as president, but he has been there even before he became vice president. Same with Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich, in my opinion, right now, if he decides to run, he will be the one that I vote for. He knows what goes on. He knows financially how to take care of things because he's done it before. He's put together all these programs. He's done all of the things that are presidential to do and would be able to continue doing them. But there are very few people in our government who take enough initiative to be able to be president. And there are just a few of them scattered here and there. We need to put in more people who are interested enough to learn. We've got an awful lot of senators and representatives who are just there for the money.
And how old is he now?
Well, if you want to get into old, if he's not that old, by the way, but our presidents have a tendency to be old. I don't think being young has any advantage.
Well, if we want to put people that have some exposure, we could put, what's the kid's name, Mike Reagan, who's now a talk show host and still involved. And in fact, I think he got reelected in an office by just coming out and doing a quick 15-second soundbite. A quick 15-second soundbite and just going, I'm tired of this, I'm not going to take it anymore, and he got elected.
Hmm.
I think I just got a virus.
What?
Sorry. Well, you know, the problem with Reagan is he was around people who were in the presidency or in the office, but he wasn't paying attention. He was the president's son. He didn't care. He's never been real political, only because he's been required to be. Forced into it.
He got into his contract with America from 1994.
Okay, you're talking about Newt Gingrich?
Uh-huh.
And what about it?
That contract with America that he had when he was in the Republicans back in 94.
Yes. And what do you think did our economy so well at that particular time? It wasn't the Democrats. If you look at that contract and you look at what took place, you'll find that almost everything that was done of any consequence was because of him, not because of Clinton.
Well, I know that they were two formidable opponents back in the 90s.
Actually, they worked together rather well to to fix our economy.
Well, that wasn't my impression when I went to Washington, D.C. That was the time that I was in elected office as a Lane County Commissioner. And, I mean, it was just acidic on Capitol Hill between the Republicans and the Democrats.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But specifically, Newt Gingrich worked with Clinton because they weren't going to get anywhere unless they did. And they finally found common ground. And it was his contract with America that did an awful lot of it.
So what do you think would be good qualities for a president?
Well, first of all, I think you should be able to think for yourself. And I don't think that Obama has been doing that. He may be doing it a little bit more now than he ever has. But I think he was nothing but a yes man for the Democratic National Committee and has been that way all the way through. They helped put him in there. He was thus beholden to them. And then for the first 2 years of his political life, that's what he did. And they tried ramming things through when they had complete control over House and Senate and the administration. So, and they just rammed him through, and including going to the point of waiting till Sunday night to pass bills and get them in unnoticed. And they did a lot of that kind of stuff. And now, of course, that's a little difficult, more difficult anyway, to do. But I just don't think he had a real original thought in his head.
And speaking of original thought, 646-721-9887. We have 18 minutes left in the program. If you would like to call in, and would you vote for President Obama, or would you not? If not, who would be your ideal candidate? 646-721-9887. Also, the chat room is open. And if you missed the show and are listening to this on the archive, send us an email with your opinion about who you would or would not vote for. Talk at krbnradio.com, and we'll read the emails on the next show.
It would be real interesting to find out.
Well, I did the math, and
yes,
Newt Gingrich is a little bit younger than I thought. Maybe it was his gray hair, but he was born in June of 43, so this year he'll have his 68 candles on his birthday cake.
43 is 68?
He's 68 years old, born in 1943.
I'm 44, and I'm only 66.
Well, he hasn't had his birthday yet.
Oh, okay. Whatever.
That happens in June.
It's that year stuff that always throws everything off.
As a president, that's not old.
For a president, that's not that old.
So how old is Ron Paul?
Well, I'll have to.
He's the one I would really like to vote for, but I know there was. I'm with everybody else. I very much doubt that there would be any possibility of him getting.
Well, she's looking that up. Something that really annoys me whenever we have these presidential elections, you get, well, two things really. It starts out back east. We have about a half dozen candidates that are running, and of course, by the time it gets over to the West Coast, our choices are gone by, you know, who we get to vote for. Secondly, all these people that decide that they're going to run, they go through and they do the campaigns and everything, and then they decide, oh, okay, I'm done. I'm just going to drop out of the election. It's like, if you're going to do it, do it.
Okay, I don't understand who just drops out. I mean,
a lot of them drop out.
Well, they drop out because they know they can't win.
Well, that gets back to the thing, too, about because we have the what do they call it? Where they go through and start whittling things out, but they do it from state to state to state, and the primaries. And by the time we get a chance to have our say, we have nobody left to choose from. So now we're going between, you know, the lesser of two evils.
Well, then you just need to move to Washington, D.C. or something, obviously. If you elect to live on the wrong side of the world, that's what you're going to have to put up with, I guess.
Well, but according to my calculations, Ron Paul, born August 20th, 1935, so he'll be 76 this year.
See, he's the one I really would like to vote for, but he is getting up in years. But his son might be okay. His son is quite interested in politics. Unlike Reagan's son, Ron Paul has imparted his ideas and ideals, part of them, at least, with his son, and at least I think instilled the fervor for fight with his son. And his son is in politics. He's a senator
senator from Kentucky.
Right. So.
So, like the question that I asked, what type of qualifications would you want? What would you want the president to do? Number one on my list would be, let's take care of the borders and the security of our country.
Yeah, see, I personally think one of the things that I would like as a president has nothing to do with individual little things like that. It has to do with the fact that I'd like someone who can think. And in that idea and ideal, I'm going to maybe surprise some people, maybe not. I might even be convinced to vote for Trump, Donald Trump. He does think. Some of his thinking is a little scary, but I think overall, once he got into the office, because he doesn't know exactly what goes on in the office, but he has enough money, he's been there enough times, he's got a lot more ideas than a lot of people, I think.
He knows how to run a business.
And he knows how to run a business. He knows finances. He knows how when to hold them and when to show them.
Quintessential showman.
That's right.
Which is why Reagan was so popular, because of his acting background and because his familiarity via Hollywood. I think that contributed quite a bit to his popularity, even though people didn't necessarily agree with his politics.
And the one thing that I'm sure that Donald Trump is not running for office for, if he runs, is to get rich.
Exactly. Well, this is like Ross Perot when he was running. You know, one of he reached out to people by saying that, you know, people are Rhodes Scholars, R-O-A-D Scholars, and was explaining it in a way that people could understand and getting people involved. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, that things happen and he dropped out, but maybe that's what we need, is somebody who's actually ran a business, knows how to function, knows how to say, okay, like Trump, you're fired.
See, that's the thing. When we hired Obama, he had done nothing. He had done nothing. And what he had done it in, where he had done his nothing, is in the most corrupt state in the entire United States. So as far as I'm concerned,
and he spent more time campaigning than showing up in Washington for Senate votes.
Well, that's true, too. He never showed up for anything, hardly, yeah.
But you make an excellent point there, that how can you run a country if you've never ran a business or had a business?
Really?
I mean, really, what's the difference?
Since the only thing he ever did run was he did do some public service work, but for a very corrupt organization, as far as I was concerned, and yet we still put him in there. I know why we put him in there. We didn't put him in there because he knew what he was doing. We put him in there because he was a first.
Well, he was a first, and look who he was running against.
Well, I would have rather had Hillary Clinton. I think she thinks more than he does.
Well, in a sense, some of the Hillary's policies, like on the health care plan, we got.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Even Hillary, by the way, announced that she's not going to she doesn't want to do the job she's doing now if Obama gets reelected.
She wants to step down as Secretary of State.
Right.
Really? I knew she'd not going to run for president again, but I didn't know she wanted to step down for Secretary of State. And maybe it's because, I would again say it's because she's being told what to say rather than being allowed to what to say. Okay. I mean, it's obviously because these people are not, our government is not speaking with one tongue anymore. I mean, that was one of the most important things, is that everybody in the administration have the same idea. They sit down and have meetings about everybody needs to come up with the same idea so that at least there's one policy, not six policies. And we haven't had that since this government has taken over. Everybody has their own ideas, and nobody sits down and thinks too much about any of them.
Well, I think our ideal president would be someone maybe like Donald Trump who doesn't require being paid by the people. And I think that should be a standard for all the government workers, is not getting paid. And they would definitely have a different attitude about what's really going on.
But then every little school kid that wants to grow up to be president of the United States would also have to want to grow up to be a billionaire so that they can afford the job.
Well, it would weed out all the ones that couldn't do it.
No, no, it wouldn't. Just because you can make money doesn't mean you have a brain.
Well,
that's not my point.
I mean, like somebody like you and me with our funds, we couldn't run. Not unless we're really good showmen and can get people to back us.
Mm-hmm. See, and that's what we've got in the office. We've got people who can go out and beg. We don't have people who have ideas or are real talent or anything else. We have people who can go out and beg for money, and that's what they do in all of our governmental positions. They all have to run out and beg for money because it's come so expensive to run for an office. We need to have some sort of reform and to change how much it costs to run for office. Unfortunately, everybody's idea, I'm sure, of financial campaign reform means that all of the radio stations and television stations and newspapers have to donate the time and space for these advertising campaigns. And, of course, that means that they're the ones paying for it. And I don't know. We could, well, again, we're talking about so much money now, even requiring everyone to pay a dollar in the United States isn't going to get anywhere close to what we're spending. That isn't even close to what Obama's going to spend all by himself. So we're just spending way too much money on trying to fund our government, the people in it, not the government itself, just fund the people in it that are wanting to run. It's just way important.
Well, here's a radical thought. What about eliminating the presidential office?
Candy says we're off the air. I don't know. It went away. Who knows? Did you sign it? Anyway, I'm sorry. What was your last comment?
What about eliminating the office altogether?
Which office? The presidential?
Yeah.
Why don't? No, I think we need somebody to do something of the sort, but it's just there's too much money involved in it at this particular point in time. I mean, it's not
true for any political office, whether you're running for the city council or whether you're running for president. I mean, it's just outrageous now what it's costing people to run for political office.
It all has to be reformed. It all has to be changed. See, the thing is, times have changed. For a while there, we had to spend a huge amount of money in order to get many people in across the country to know who we are. I mean, you know, John Doe can't go run for a national office if only the people in Cottage Grove know who he is. So consequently, that became a very expensive thing to put advertising out there and let people in the rest of the world know who John Doe is. But now we've got the internet, we've got all these different, rather less expensive ways of doing things, that we need to start reevaluating how to promote the campaign and make new rules.
Well, we were mentioning Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. According to a Gallup poll this week, her favorability rating is now up to 66%, which is higher than Obama's 54%, and Defense Secretary Robert Gates is at 52%, and Vice President Joe Biden is at 46%. So I think that I heard the reason she was stepping down was because of the reelection part of it. And that's what all appointees do, is they make it clear that they would be willing not to serve. So if we've got just a few minutes left, 5 minutes left remaining in the show, 646-721-9887, 646-721-9887. Be sure to call in.
There's still time to do it. We got some people in the chat room. Conversation's going in there. Welcome. 4 minutes remaining. There's still plenty of time. If you want to give us a quick call, 646-721-9887. Let us know your opinion on whether you would or would not vote for Obama, or what you think. Has he done a good job? Has he not done a good job?
I sort of think he hasn't done a job. That's pretty much it, to be honest with you. What he has done, in my opinion, has been wrong. That's just all there is to it. It's been wrong. And so, because I've said it already. I don't need to probably keep repeating it. He doesn't think for himself. And he's changing now, perhaps, because he's actually got a little leeway, shall we say. He isn't going to be chastised quite so much if he doesn't go along with the Democratic genre or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. He can think for himself a little bit more because he has other opinions in there. But to this point, nobody else's opinion counted except the Democratic opinion. And so he didn't dare take a different stance. And so we really don't know what his opinions are, I don't think.
Well, as I just posted the question out to the chat room, we've already got bills that were 2,000 and 3,000 pages long that nobody reads. And now we have to fight the Obamacare issue and all the little stuff that the earmarks that were included in that. Do you think that, because fortunately there's only two terms a president can have, if Obama is reelected, that there's going to be more of these type of Obamacare type of bills put out that we're going to be spending the next decade going through fighting and court battles and everything like that just to take care of them?
I think not, because unless we somehow or another screw up and elect a Democratic majority again, the Republican side of the House and Senate are going to have an opportunity to stop those things before they become bills.
See, well, I don't know. Why read the bill? Are we got to pass the bill to know what's in it? That type of attitude that they have up there. I mean, like the omnibus bill. The only reason why we're not battling that is because somebody actually came up and said, "All right, we are going to read it out loud, page for page, all 2,000 pages, because you guys won't do it. You won't do your job." So
okay.
We want to make sure you know what's in it before you vote on it.
The we you're talking about was the Republican side of the House that I was talking about, and we don't know. I think it's the Democratic side of the House that figured they have the majority. They had everything they needed. They didn't have to do anything. They just pass it as it was. That doesn't mean everybody felt that way.
That's how we end up with so many unintended consequences of laws that are passed by them being written by lawyers and having to be interpreted by policy analysts, that's going to your that no one reads or thinks for themselves anymore, and that they depend upon these analysts to tell them how to vote.
Well, and whatever happened to the line item veto?
Well, I think it's still around.
Because like that 1099 thing where any purchase over $600, you had to do a 1099. Couldn't Obama have vetoed that in the bill?
Obama, it was Obama's bill. Why would he have vetoed it?
Vetoed it?
I mean, it was his bill. He got to take things out of it. Whatever. Anyway, we're out of time again.
This morning?
Yeah, we're out of time until next Wednesday, same time, 10 p.m. Pacific time.
10
a.m.
A.m. I don't know. Anyways, if you have a topic of interest, send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. We are on Facebook as well and Twitter. And you can hear our archives either on the KRBN Radio website or we're available on iTunes now, too. Blog Talk Radio is making changes to the pages, so keep in touch.
And I'd like to welcome Crestwell Chronicle readers to KRBN. And see you next week.
If you like today's show, please let us know by visiting us on Facebook and clicking on the Like button.
You can also get show updates on Twitter and on our website at www.krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.